From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Quick, what do you think of when you hear Machiavelli? You think of the term Machiavellian, right? You think conniving and manipulative. Well, that is what most people get from Niccolò Machiavelli's political writing from the 15th and 16th centuries, that it's better to be feared than loved, for example. Well, the scholar Maurizio Varoli says if you think Machiavelli was a deceiver, you're wrong. The man, he says, was generous and playful. He was loyal and intense, but he was also realistic. He saw through the BS and he hated insincerity. Varoli says his real art was interpreting the passions of people, interpreting their intentions and motives. It's less science than art. Varoli will join us today to explain what Machiavelli can teach us about how to choose a good leader. Join us after the news. Hi, it's Doug Fabrizio with a call out to you filmmakers out there or those who've always wanted to make a film. On June 15th, we're hosting a screening, what we're calling an open screen night, and it's your chance to make a short documentary. Here are the rules. It can't be more than 6 minutes. It has to be real. It's a documentary. And that's kind of it. But here's the theme. The body is a temple. The body is a temple. There's $500 in it if you win. You can get the details at videowest.org. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Trying to figure out what makes a good political leader is tough because it's hard to understand what exactly it is a citizen is looking for. And this presidential year is as good an illustration of that as any. The scholar Maurizio Varoli says most of the political pundits you hear from these days try and understand political action through abstract models, models like this year that don't always fit. Varoli says what we need is someone who is more realistic about the way people actually think and act. And you know who was really good at doing that? Machiavelli was. That Machiavelli, Niccolò Machiavelli, the philosopher and diplomat from the 15th and 16th centuries. Varoli says Machiavelli was brilliant at interpreting the passions of people, of understanding their intentions and their motives. And in a new book, he says, we should take Machiavelli as our political mentor to learn how to choose a leader. So that's what we're doing today. We're talking about Machiavelli, his life and his work, and what he can teach us about politics and human nature. The book is How to Choose a Leader, Machiavelli's Advice to Citizens. Maurizio Varoli is a professor emeritus of politics at Princeton University. He's a professor of government at the University of Texas, Austin, also a professor of political communication at the University of Italian Switzerland in Lugano. His many books include Niccolò's Smile, which we'll talk about. He's joining us today from a studio in Austin, Texas. And Maurizio Varoli, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation. Delighted to have this opportunity to discuss with you about Machiavelli and politics.
When did you first get interested in Machiavelli? Did it go way back? You've been interested in a long time, I know.
It's a long love story, the story between myself and Niccolò that goes back to the early 80s when I was a graduate student at the European University Institute in Florence. At the time, I was working on a dissertation on Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and in the contrat social, in the social contract, I noticed an important citation of Machiavelli. And therefore, following Rousseau, I began studying Machiavelli, and I have never stopped since. And I think I won't stop. I will continue, as I told you. It's a lasting love. I hope it is reciprocated. I mean, that Machiavelli also likes me.
It's interesting you say that in particular you were drawn not just to his political writing, but here's how you put it in one of your books. You said you were interested in the way in which he laughed about life and other people. Explain what you mean.
Well, I think it's rather simple. I like and I appreciate and I admire Niccolò, the man, more than I admire Machiavelli, the writer. Why do I admire Niccolò, the man, even more than Machiavelli, the writer. Basically, because he was capable of accomplishing what I think is the key of the wisdom about life. Because he was able to be serious, grave, concerned. When he was dealing with serious, important matters like politics, like justice, like liberty, like war, like peace, like corruption. At the same time, however, he was capable of being playful, ironic, of being a good friend, of being transgressive at times, of being daring. I think this is the right way of living one's own life. If I were asked to indicate to young Americans a writer from whom they can get not only good political ideas but also an important wisdom on how to live their own lives, I would have no hesitation to indicate Niccolò Machiavelli. In particular, as you pointed out, for his way of smiling.
There's this legend from Machiavelli's life that you've written about. It's known as Machiavelli's Dream. I wanted you to tell that because I think it's such a telling story about the kind of man he was, the way he thought.
Well, the story of Niccolò's dream is a story that came up in the 17th century, many years after Machiavelli's death. He passed away in 1527. It might be apocryphal, but even if the story is not authentic, meaning even if Machiavelli, in fact, has not told, has not narrated the story and the dream that I am about to reveal, it fits Niccolò perfectly well. So my position as a scholar is that we can take this story seriously. It's a story that Machiavelli might very well have narrated on his deathbed. When he was about to die, he told his wife and his sons and daughters and his friends that he had had a dream. In that dream, he saw at first a long line of poorly dressed, miserable, wretched, humble persons. And he said that he asked those people, "Who are you?" And they replied, "We are the blessed, we are the saints, we are all going to paradise." Then he says, "I have seen another long line of very noble men, all elegantly dressed, with great majesty in their faces, and I ask them, 'Who are you?' 'We are legislators, we are political leaders, we are captains of armies, and we are all going to hell.'" And Machiavelli's comment to his friends was, "When I die, I want to be with the second group of people. I want to go to hell with them." That fits Niccolò very well because his way of facing great choices, great tragedies in life, was always with a touch of humor, this to say, not disrespect, but a story that helps to face something as terrible as death, but it also faces his philosophy of life, namely that you must be prepared to go to hell, whatever it means, to accomplish important things in political life.
You say in your book he wasn't very concerned about the afterlife, about the idea of a soul or salvation or sin, not terribly religious, and I'm wondering if that was that unique for the time?
It was not unique, not being religious in the sense that Niccolò was not a church goer.
Right.
He was not attending Mass. We know that from his own admission. He admitted that. And from letters from friends, they say, "Niccolò, you do not often go to church." But he was concerned with his own soul. If by soul we mean the deepest and most important aspect of our personal identity. He, in one of his last letters in April 18, 1527, he wrote, "I love my country, my fatherland, more than my soul." Mm. What did he mean by that? He meant that for him the country, that is to say the common liberty, that is to say the republic, was for him more important than his own soul. But I also think that Machiavelli believed in the deep of his heart that God must be intelligent. Mm. That is, if you work for your country, for the common good, for the common liberty, what you are doing must be appreciated by God. Because God, in his view, wants us to be free. Therefore, if we serve our country, and by country meant the common liberty, God will appreciate. And probably the best way to go to paradise was to have God as a friend is to serve the common good, as he did.
Yeah. Where did this idea come from that Machiavelli was cunning and deceitful and that smile wasn't playful but in fact sinister? I mean, this impression comes from people misinterpreting his writing, like The Prince, for example, I guess.
Well, what Machiavelli wrote in The Prince is that as long as you can, and you in this case means a political leader, mm-hmm. if you are a political leader, if you are the president of the United States of America, or if you are the chief of a government in a democratic country, in any country, what you have to do is to be good, period.
Yeah.
You have to follow as much as you can the political and moral virtues of faith. You have to be faithful. You have to be generous. You have to be compassionate. These are the main virtues. But there are circumstances, Machiavelli tells you, in which if you are faithful, if you are compassionate, if you are liberal, you risk to put the liberty and the safety of your country in jeopardy. In those circumstances, and only in those circumstances, you must, as he puts it, imparare a poter essere non buono, to learn how not to be good.
Right.
To be able to learn a poter essere, to be able not to be good. Notice, I'm sure that our patient listeners have got it. It's a phrase like this is convoluted. To learn how to be able not to be good. It indicates the concern that Machiavelli has with the importance of the words he is putting in writing. So he never said that the prince or a ruler or a leader is authorized to be wicked, to be unfaithful, to be cruel. He says that he must be prepared to learn if it is really necessary, not to become wicked, which means that you ordinary, normally are wicked, are immoral. But for a moment, enter in evil in order to exit from evil. He is discussing extreme circumstances. Which circumstances? When the safety of your country is in danger. So I don't know. We know when the reputation of Machiavelli as being deceitful and cunning emerged. It emerged around the mid of the 16th century in the context of the Counter-Reformation. It's an old technique. If you want to defend yourself from the accusations of being unfaithful, say that somebody else is unfaithful. In this way, you defend yourself. It's an old rhetorical technique. I want our listeners to be aware of a fact. This is an undisputable fact. One of Machiavelli's, I mean Niccolò Machiavelli, the real Niccolò Machiavelli, vices was he was outspoken. So if there was a vice, certainly was not that he was deceitful. That's why he had such a hard life, because he did not fear to speak the truth even to very powerful people.
You point out Machiavelli's ideas had a really powerful impact, and I hadn't realized this, on some of America's founding fathers. John Adams loved Machiavelli.
You are absolutely right. If I have sufficient scholarly energies left, and I hope I do, I'm going to write a book that will be called, please don't laugh too much, Machiavelli and Prophecy. By this, I mean to highlight the prophetic dimension of Machiavelli's political thought. And I will end with a chapter that should be entitled Machiavelli and the American Prophecy. Because, as you pointed out, we have evidences that the American founding fathers knew Machiavelli. They disagreed on particular points of his ideas. That's out of the question. But there is something very special about Machiavelli and America that I'd like to investigate. And this is, and it goes like this. Machiavelli has written important prophetic pages. His prophecy was to see in the future, to help to bring about with his writings, a strong, free, virtuous republic with great leaders that could stand against external attacks, committed to the principle of expanding liberty, republican liberty, in the world, if possible. Now, as Machiavelli's prophecy turned out to be true in Italy, unfortunately not. I'm an Italian citizen and an American citizen, I can say this. But certainly Machiavelli's prophecy came true in America. There is something special about Machiavelli and America, because the United States of America still are the most powerful, the freest, most respected republic ever instituted so far. Machiavelli would have loved to see the coming into existence of a republic like that. But there is more, and I shall be very brief. If I were asked to indicate one of the wisest principles that American political history and American political leaders have designed and expressed, I would certainly cite Abraham Lincoln idea of that. If you want to have a rebirth of freedom, if you want to redeem your country from corruption, if you want your country to go ahead in on the road of liberty, you must bring your country back to its founding principles. Now, this is Machiavelli. This is Machiavelli, Discourses on Livy, Book 3, Chapter 1. This is the most distinctive of all Machiavellian, of all Machiavelli's principles, the idea that redemption, rebirth must take the form of going back to the founding principles.
I want to come back to that point, actually.
Sure.
In fact, we'll come back right near the end. When we get back from a break, though, let's talk about Machiavelli's life. Maurizio Veroli is with us. His new book is How to Choose a Leader, Machiavelli's Advice to Citizens. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Niccolò Machiavelli. You probably remember him from your college political science class. He was a gifted strategist in the 15th and 16th centuries, a philosopher, a diplomat. And he's always thought to be cunning and duplicitous. That's where the term Machiavellian comes from. But the scholar Maurizio Veroli says that's not really who he was. He was smart and honest and objective, not to mention kind and playful and wise. Veroli has written a new book about Machiavelli called How to Choose a Leader, Machiavelli's Advice to Citizens, and we're talking with him about it. Let's get the setting right, Professor Veroli, for Machiavelli. This was Florence, of course. You describe it in one of your books as unique as a school of life because it was, you say, it was magnificent and miserable. Talk about Florence.
Yes. Yes, it's impossible to understand Machiavelli without having an idea of the kind of city in which he lived all his life. Machiavelli's Florence was a spectacular school of beauty, of artistic beauty. The beauty of Florence churches and palaces was stunning, and anyone who has visited Florence can understand what I mean by this. But Florence was also a free republic that, however, was suffering of some major political and social problems. First of all, Florence was militarily extremely weak. Therefore, in 1512, and Machiavelli was serving the Republic as advisor to the chief Gonfalonier, Soderini, Florence was attacked by an army of Spaniard infantry and troops of the Pope. And Florence lost its liberty. So great beauty, great elegance, great finesse, great artistic accomplishments, but military and political weakness. Second problem of Florence was, of the Republic of Florence, was surely the fact that Florence was extremely unjust to the people living under its dominion, particularly the subject cities like Pisa or Pistoia or the people living in the countryside. And Florence was also divided. It was a city full of extremely ferocious enmities among families, among social groups. So Machiavelli surely loved Florence, but he also worried a lot about Florence. And he was not afraid of telling the truth to his fellow citizens about the future of the Republic. He was extremely direct. He was concerned. From his earliest writings, as early as we have examples of oration, of speeches that he composed in 1502, till his very last works, his recurrent admonition was, if you want to remain free, if you want to avoid being conquered, you must have military strength and political wisdom. You must liberate yourself from that political corruption that is making you weak and incapable of protecting yourself. That was Machiavelli's Florence. With one last remark, Machiavelli was able to see with his own eyes, to witness how powerful political prophecy is. Machiavelli grew up in a city in which a preacher, Dominican monk, Girolamo Savonarola, with the simple power of his prophetic words, was able to persuade the Florentines to institute a free republic. So prophecy, beauty, but also great political and military weakness. That was Machiavelli's Florence.
He He was not born in the upper classes. He said he was born in poverty, but it wasn't quite poverty. He was just not born in a great, prominent family. And strong families were of course, everything in this era. The Medicis we know about. His father was well-respected, hadn't succeeded much, though. His father loved learning, and his father loved books, and he was really close to Niccolo, his son. They joked around a lot. They did pranks together. Where did this irreverence, this kind of clear-eyed view, come from? Was it his father?
I think that Bernardo Machiavelli, the father of Niccolò, he must have been one of the very few examples of an impoverished lawyer in Florence. Lawyers then and now were very wealthy in Florence, and not only in Florence, as we know from the United States. But Machiavelli had, probably because his father was not powerful, was not a paternal figure in the classical or in the traditional sense. He was not a pater familias, someone to be revered, someone to be feared. The letters that we have between Machiavelli and his father, they show us Machiavelli teasing his father, being playful with his father. Surely not all young Florentine persons of the age of Machiavelli, in Machiavelli's time, would dare to think, to speak to their fathers the way Niccolò was speaking to his own good Bernardo. And there is a Machiavelli had very sweet words about his father after he passed. His father passed away in 1500. There was his father was buried in a church near Florence. And for some reasons, it was necessary to translate the remains of his father to a kind of common grave or shared grave with other with other remains, with other bodies. And the chaplain, the priest asked Machiavelli, well, would you agree would you give us permission to move your father into a common grave? He said, oh, yes, yes. My father was a good fellow. He always loved company. He's going to be happy about this decision. Now, people don't know is how kind was Niccolò Machiavelli himself to his daughters and to his sons. We have a number of very touching letters from 1526, a year before he passed away. In one letter, he reassures Baccina, one of his daughters, that he had purchased for her a kind of little present. It was a kind of necklace. But the best story, and Machiavelli was at the time engaged with Francesco Guicciardini, taking care of the papal army to try to stop the invasion of German infantry, an army that was coming south from Germany and that eventually perpetrated the sack of Rome on May 6, 1527. So he was engaged in something that was not that simple and dramatic. This was saving Italy and saving Florence from a dreadful invasion of German pikemen. Yet he found the time to buy something for his little daughter. But the most fascinating story in one sentence is the exchange between Niccolò Machiavelli and his youngest son, Guido. Guido was very close to a little mule. The mule turned mad. Animals at times turn mad, not just human beings, but also animals at times they become insane. The practice at the time was to kill mad animals because they were useless. And Machiavelli, on the contrary, reassures his son Guido, no, who cares, don't worry. Take the little mule away and let him free. And probably with freedom, he will recover its sanity. It's a fantastic story about sanity and liberty.
Yeah.
But it's also a nice story about compassion and how, about a very special way of being a father in early 16th century Florence.
You talk about how he was some of his gifts as a as an advisor and some of his insights, that he was honest, that he could speak candidly, could speak frankly to powerful people, that he really resisted the common opinion. He looked for something that was more honest than just the sort of common conventional view. And then I think you also mentioned that he rejected the principle of authority. You said he rejects even the authority, for example, of Aristotle, which I think that's an important insight, to say that he didn't just accept the idea of authority. He called everything into question, even something classical like Aristotle.
Yes, you say three important words about Machiavelli. You mentioned honesty. You mentioned that he was not afraid of speaking frankly. And you mentioned that he was capable of questioning even the highest scholarly authorities of his own time. Let me briefly comment on each. Machiavelli, in his own times, and later he had many enemies. In fact, he lost his post as advisor to the Gonfalonier of the Republic of Florence, the equivalent today of a president of the Republic of the United States. He lost it because he had so many enemies that he was fired when there was a governmental change in 1512. At that time, he wrote on December 10, 1513, he wrote probably the best letter in the whole Italian literature. And at the end of that letter, he makes the statement, "La mia povertà è la prova della mia onestà." My poverty is the evidence of my honesty. Right. Because after 15 years that he served the Republic and he administered huge amounts of cash, in fact, coins, in fact, of money to pay for mercenary troops that were fighting, so to speak, for Florence, he was poorer than before. And no one has been able to question his assertion. Machiavelli served his republic with impeccable honesty. Mm. But as you said, he was also capable of going against the current opinions, the prevailing opinions of his own time. His nickname, he had two nicknames. One was Machia, which means playful, someone who organizes pranks, jokes, Machia. But the other, and this is less known, is Keppia. Keppia is a small fish that swims against the current. I've learned this from my wife, Gabriella, who has done research on this. Keppia is the fish that goes against the current. So Machiavelli was a Keppia and a Machia. And he, as you said, he was not very keen to accept ideas simply because an important thinker has asserted them. And in Machiavelli's time, the great authorities in political theory and political discourse were Aristotle and Cicero. And in one letter with his friend Francesco Vettori, Vettori cites Aristotle. Say, "You see, Niccolò, what Aristotle says on this issue?" Machiavelli responds is, "I don't know what Aristotle says. What interests me is what goes on, what can be proved, and what can be reasonably discussed." For him, reason and facts were more important than the authority of even the great Aristotle.
What do you mean when you say that the art that Machiavelli really mastered was that of interpreting the intentions and the motives of people? Because it seems like the prince, that writing was just this really clear-eyed commentary on what he saw about the truth of human nature. It seems like that anyway. That was less, as I was saying a little bit earlier, it was less science than art, that he had to understand their intentions, their passions, rather than just some abstract philosophy. He wanted to see how it played out in real terms. It was sort of a realism to it.
I think you got it right when you said that Machiavelli's expertise was more art than science, because the kind of expertise that were in which he really excelled was the ability not so much to say what human beings in general do, because this was of little use. His great expertise was to be able to suggest what this or that particular leader is going to do. This is interpretation. This is art. This is knowledge of the individual, knowledge of the particular. This is not general science. Machiavelli has been praised for centuries as the founder of modern science of politics. In fact, he was not a scientist of politics in any sense that is remotely close to what we mean by science. He wanted to understand what this or that particular prince or king or emperor or a people or a council is going to do. How do you do that? As I explained in the book How to Choose a Leader, if you really want to know, to have some reasonable, wise guess on what a political leader is going to do, you must touch him or her with your hands. That is to use Machiavelli's language. It is to say you have to understand his or her passions. What kind of person is this leader? Is he courageous or shy? Is he fearful or ambitious? Is he eager of becoming glorious, or is he or she only concerned with fame? Does he or she entertain thoughts of revenge, or is he or she keen to have peace and to promote peace? You have to be able to understand individuals in their individuality in that particular moment. And for this, you have to look not so much at what they say, but what they have done, and what kind of beliefs and what kind of memories are important for them. This was Niccolò Machiavelli's art at its best. And I really think that it is much better to know this kind of interpretive art if we want to be wise citizens than to rely on abstract laws of political science, or even worse, to pretend to judge political leaders and to choose political leaders, making some kind of mathematical equations on the assumption that they are going to be rational, because in fact they are not.
Maurizio Veroli is with us, professor of government at the University of Texas, Austin, the author of many books. We're talking about his latest, How to Choose a Leader, Machiavelli's Advice to Citizens. We'll take another break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio Westenberg Fabrizio, back now with Maurizio Veroli. He's a professor of government at the University of Texas, Austin, a scholar on Niccolò Machiavelli. He has a new book called How to Choose a Leader, Machiavelli's Advice to Citizens. I want to go through some of the elements of this new book, How to Choose a Leader. I wanted to ask you something, first of all, that I thought was interesting. You say that, you point out that Machiavelli, of course, was ambitious. Of course, he wanted glory and position. But he believed that the right way to get there was to use what you call public modes. Explain that. He believed in acting for the common benefit. He didn't believe in private modes or private ways. Explain the distinction for him.
The distinction is between the right kind of ambition and the wrong kind of ambition. Mm-hmm. It was a distinction that was rather conventional, very widespread, commonly acknowledged. in Machiavelli's times, particularly in Florence. Another way to put the distinction was to stress the difference between glory and fame. Hmm. You can become famous in many manners. Hitler is famous. Stalin is certainly famous. We can continue. To be famous simply means that people talk about of you, that they remember you. Glory is another story. It has a special beauty. It requires to be glorious. You must have a special kind of moral excellence. And Machiavelli stressed in his works, but even more he exemplified with his own life, that it is right for human beings to try to attain glory and not fame. And to attain glory, there is but one way for Machiavelli. It is to do something important for the common good. No other achievements make you glorious. Doesn't matter how wealthy you are. Doesn't matter how powerful you are. Doesn't even matter how many countries you have conquered. In fact, for Machiavelli, Caesar was not glorious, was famous, and Caesar conquered, and Caesar was the founder of the Roman Empire, and Caesar defeated many enemies. No. Power, money, military conquests are not sufficient for Machiavelli to be considered glorious. You are glorious only if you found and defend a good political regime, a good republic, and you are glorious only if you are even more glorious if you redeem a people, if you redeem a country from foreign domination, from despotism, and from corruption. I say this is easy to read in his works, for instance, Discourses on Livy, Book 1, Chapter 37, or Book 1, Chapter 10. There are many places you can find these concepts discussed by Machiavelli. But look at his own life. What did he try to do? What did he do during his own life? When he had the chance, he was an impeccable public servant, he would say. Council. When he was ousted from service, mm-hmm. he wrote books like The Prince, like the Discourses on Livy, to teach others, to teach future generations the kind of wisdom that would have allowed them, other people in the future, to accomplish what he was not able to accomplish, that is, to liberate Italy from the barbarians, to establish a good republican government in Florence, and to try to help a religious reformation, changing the religious spirit, the religious mores of the Italians, because he believed that if you can't do great things, at least teach others the ways to accomplish great political achievements, because this is the safest way to glory.
I want to see if we can quickly go through a few of these chapters in your book, or at least some of the statements that you think can be helpful from Machiavelli. Judge by the hands, not by the eyes. What does he mean by that?
You should look at what political leaders do. Do not judge on the basis of what you see. Appearances can be deceitful. Judge on the basis of what they have done.
Yeah. Citizens ought to keep their hands on the republic and choose the lesser evil.
It means that you should go to vote, at least.
Yeah.
Because keeping the hands on the republic means that you control, you tend to have a say on public life. If you do not, if good citizens do not keep their hands on the Republic, you can be sure that wicked and corrupt persons will keep their hands on the Republic to steal as much as they can from it.
Whoever desires constant success must change his conduct with the times.
Yes, there are times in which you have to be extremely bold, audacious, and times in which you have to, a political leader must be extremely cautious and prudent. You know, but this is easy to say, difficult to accomplish. It's easy to talk the talk and difficult to walk the walk. And I ask the listeners to be compassionate about my Italian accent. Nobody's perfect, but I hope I got the saying right. Because there is nature within it. Each of us has a nature. Some of us are inclined to be bold and audacious. Others are uncertain and shy and cautious. Mm. So it would be good to be able to change your conduct, but it's very difficult.
This one caught my eye. In well-regulated republics, the state ought to be rich and the citizens poor.
If I'm going to suggest Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump to go on television and say, look, my fellow Americans, I want you to be poor and the state rich, that's for sure the safest recipe to lose the elections. There is no doubt about it. Only what one word of clarification. By being poor, Machiavelli means that you cannot live without working. For him, to be poor means that you have to work in order to have the necessary means of life. To be poor for him means that you cannot afford of living in luxury, mm-hmm. and just enjoying the profits from your properties or from your financial assets. And when he stresses that this state must be rich, it means that the Republic must have sufficient resources to be able to protect itself from foreign dangers or from internal threats, and a good Republic cannot be indebted to foreign powers. Mm.
That was a big one for him. Of course, that was a big context for a lot of his writing. He wanted Florence, he wanted Italy not to be dependent on foreign powers. That was important for him. Let me go to this
exactly.
One. Prolonged commands brought Rome to servitude.
People who stay in power for a long time, they are inclined to form networks of supporters who are loyal to them, yeah. Private loyalties, clients, people who depend on the leader for their jobs, for their wealth, for their status. This is not good for the Republic, because in a good Republic, you must have citizens who feel loyalty to the Republic, not to that particularly powerful person. And persons become powerful if they stay in power for a long time.
A prince becomes esteemed when he shows himself either a true friend or a real enemy.
Oh, yes, definitely. This goes against the idea of neutrality. If there are conflicts around the world, just consider World War II. Had America remained neutral, as the majority of the Americans were inclined to do, had Americans not followed Franklin Delano Roosevelt, what would have become of America and the world? You must, when there is a conflict, you must take side. It's much better to take side than to remain neutral.
Mm. And finally, I said we'd come back to this. Here's Machiavelli's quote. To ensure a long existence to religious sects or republics, it is necessary frequently to bring them back to their original principles. This gets us to Abraham Lincoln and a speech that he gave in 1854. We don't have a lot of time left, but would you mention Lincoln's sort of application of this principle?
I'm just quoting three lines from Lincoln, and it's from the speech that you have correctly cited. Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln said, "Our Republican robe is soiled and trailed in the dust. Let's repurify it. Let us turn and wash it white in the spirit, if not the blood, of the revolution. Let's return it to the position our fathers gave it, and there let it rest in peace. Let us readopt the Declaration of Independence, and with it the practices and the policy which harmonize with it." This had Machiavelli heard Lincoln say these words, he would have hugged him and he would have been moved to tears.
Finally, this is something you say at the end of your book. You say Machiavelli doesn't envisage a political leader who does all the work by himself, followed by passive citizens. You say Machiavelli is thinking of a leader who is capable of inspiring and motivating, but they're all working together, I guess. That's an important point.
Well, I would like to end this, for me, fascinating conversation by suggesting our patient listeners to read the last chapter of The Prince, in which Machiavelli exhorts someone to commit himself to the arduous, difficult task of liberating Italy from the barbarians. And the key, one of the key lines in that chapter is that a leader should be able to mobilize affection, commitment, engagement, hope, civic strength. I think this is exactly the type of leader that we need in the United States. Not so much someone who does things, but someone who inspires in the citizens a kind of Republican, democratic hope, and invites them to abandon passivity and to be committed citizens.
Maurizio Veroli, his book is How to Choose a Leader, Machiavelli's Advice to Citizens. He joined us from a studio in Austin. Thanks very much for the time, Professor.
Thank you.
Radio West, production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark, and I'm Doug Fabrizio.